Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The following is a Hoop Bowl presentation.
What is going on? It is the Hoop Bowl Clippers podcast coming at you on a Saturday afternoon. The two best words in sports, game seven. That is, of course, unless you are a fan of one of the two teams. And of course, here on the Hoop Bowl Clippers podcast, we are a fan of the Los Angeles Clippers. We live and die by the Los Angeles Clippers, and no better person to have on this show that's going to be a little bit shorter than normal because we have such a tight turnaround, so stupid the NBA, before Game 7 to bring on Justin Wilson, LA Clippers film. Justin, how are we feeling at this moment, man? Because I feel like I have gone through about 10 different cycles in the washing machine where I've been thrown out, and then I'm like, all right, cool, we're done, we're dry. I'm like, nope, you're going, you're still going again. It's like, dude, I think I need a new heart after this. It has been a ridiculous last couple of weeks. How are you feeling though?
I'm feeling well. A lot better after last night. As you said, it's been like an emotional roller coaster. They basically played two straight elimination games in game 3, game 4. Then they played another elimination game in game 6, and then they'll play another one tomorrow. So it's been, you know, normally in 7-game series, it's normally tight, but with the Clippers dropping the first two games of the series, it's kind of made the games mean so much more on the Clipper side. So it's been an adventure for sure.
I don't know where to start because we'll obviously touch on game 6 and then we'll do a lot more previewing of game 7. Normally this is a pod that kind of recaps what we have been through, but we'll do as short of a recap as Justin and I can do, which normally is not very short. And then we'll look ahead to game 7 because this is why you're listening. You know that a game 7 is either happening on the day you are listening, or it is happening tomorrow if you're able to listen later on tonight as we record this at about 4 o'clock p.m. And we'll get this hopefully out to you in a couple of hours. I want to start with last night, though, and what we saw from Kawhi Leonard. Normally when we come on this show, Justin, we're normally talking about Reggie Jackson. We're talking about Nicholas Batum. We're talking about Zoo. We never really touch on the two guys. And at the end of the pod that we did last weekend, I said, all right, we got to give some props to PG and Kawhi and what they have done. But we're going to start this one off with Kawhi because as bad as he was in game 5 and in the first quarter of game 6 is as good as he was the rest of the way. For him to be given the praise that he has been thrown throughout his entire playoff career after obviously what he did with Toronto and just how he has been one of the best players in the NBA, to actually live up to that and put a team on his back was frankly just a blast to watch, Justin. And he was incredible. There's no other way to describe it. In that fourth quarter, the Clippers needed to get a bucket, and I said it needed to be somebody besides Kawhi. It turned out that it just really needed to be Kawhi. When you were watching him last night, I know you have that huge ass picture of the tweet that says Kawhi Leonard has signed the Los Angeles Clippers. I mean, that is why the Clippers signed him, right? For a game like that.
Yeah, I mean, that was the epitome of having one of the top 3 or 4 superstar level wings in the NBA doing what they do when all the chips are down, when it matters most. And, you know, for what I was thinking about when I was watching it was that throughout Lob City and to this point, we've watched like Kevin Durant have these big playoff moments. We've watched LeBron have these like big playoff moments. And, you know, we just have never been fortunate enough to have a wing in like one of those type of guys to have those moments. So it was kind of fun to see that happen, but for us to be on the right side of that, you know. So for me, that was kind of fun to just see. I know for a lot of Clipper fans and myself included, it was like kind of anxiety inducing. But at the same time, you know, I tweeted it beforehand that like, this is fun, right? This is fun. This is good. This is all kind of par for the course for playoff basketball. And, you know, if Kawhi Leonard, if Kawhi Leonard is who we think he is, he'll have a bounce back game. That doesn't necessarily mean he needed to score 45 or 50, but it meant that, you know, he was playing, having a really good game. And, you know, it was just so happens that he had 45 or 50, but yeah, he just had a great bounce back performance. I'm being long winded here. I'm sorry. But, you know, it's kind of like Luka Doncic had a bad game four. He rebounded in game five. I think some people forget that, like, these guys are human and like, just because they are elite superstars doesn't mean they're not going to have a bad game or two. And I think that happens with Kawhi Leonard a lot. But it was fun to see him have one of those good ones, all-time Clipper performance last night.
In game five, Kawhi was 7 of 19 from the field, and he had 5 turnovers. And you can make the argument that at least 3 of those were horrendous and ended up leading to baskets on the other end. So to bounce back and go 17 of 22 in the final three quarters after starting 1 for 3 and finish 18 of 25. And I think the big number is 5 threes. He was just 1 of 7 from deep in game five. And I mean, he had 4 turnovers, so they still had turnovers. But when the guy has the ball that often, it's probably going to happen. You still would like him to cut that down a little bit. But for him to do what he did was frankly miraculous. And the Clippers need it in the worst way. They need every single bucket. For Clippers fans, they've been watching Luka have these unbelievable games. And you know what? Finally, it was our turn. It was our turn to have the player that took over that they couldn't stop. And I think Dallas did a really poor job on him in the fourth quarter. Because when a guy gets that hot, you want to get the ball out of his hands. And the Clippers did not have anybody that would scare you in the fourth quarter. I mean, PG was fine. Reggie Jackson had a huge first quarter. But apart from that, nobody else did much for that team. So you need to get the ball out of his hands. They didn't. I think it's the one adjustment, Justin, that Carlisle has left is to do whatever he can to get the ball out of Kawhi's hands and make Marcus Morris, make Nicholas Batum, make Reggie Jackson be the guys that beat you. You got to assume that's what we see in game seven, right?
Maybe.
Why maybe?
You know, because they're playing with fire if they do that, because they are an elite three-point shooting team and they've been getting tapped on some wide open looks. And like, you know, maybe they do that and they adjust if the Clippers start making threes. But I don't know if that would be the way to go if I was Dallas. The Clippers only scored 104 points last night. In my opinion, that wasn't the problem for Dallas. They started in a zone early, and I honestly would be happy with 104, holding an elite offense like the Clippers to 104 points. And I think they held the Clippers to I forgot how many points the Clippers scored in game five, but it wasn't all that high either. The Dallas Mavericks issue is that they can't score against the Clippers. Yeah. And so if I'm Dallas, the first thing that I'm looking for from an adjustment perspective is not scoring 97 points in 48 minutes and not scoring like 13 points in the fourth quarter or something wild like that. I think at one point they're like 3 for 18 in the fourth quarter. And so,
well, and, you know, and nobody's, by the way, one thing I'm cutting you off for a second. The one thing that's not being talked about in the national media is how fucking bad Luka Doncic has been in the fourth quarter. I mean, and so pardon my French, and I drop it out.
I love it, though. I love it.
But it's I'm so tired of the Clippers being dragged through the mud time and time again. And it's just one of those things where Luka Doncic is receiving all of this praise, but nobody's talking about how bad he has been in the fourth quarter. And so I just wanted to throw that out there, that he has been god-awful. And I think I saw a stat that he's shooting 22% or something in the fourth quarter in this series. So just continue.
I mean, he's been awful in a fourth quarter. And that's actually another adjustment that probably is the one of the bigger red flags than, like, doubling Kawhi Leonard. Like, it's almost like how I feel about how we've treated Luka Doncic, right? Like, yeah, it feels bad when an opposing player scores 40 or 45 points, but like, there's only so much you can do with a Luka Doncic or a Kawhi Leonard when they're making contested threes. The best thing you can do is to make sure that your offense is in order. So often, I think I even said it on a pod last week, your best defense is your offense.
Yep, you did.
And when you score 97 points, you have a huge issue that goes way farther than like trying to stop Kawhi Leonard. You cannot stop Kawhi Leonard. And if you throw two at Luka Doncic, if you throw two guys at Kawhi Leonard, you start leaving Tim Hardaway Jr. open. You start leaving Marcus Morris open. You start leaving Nicholas Batum open. And so I think, you know, Dallas will come out in a zone again, like they've done the last couple of games, and they'll go from there. But if I'm Dallas, your best bet is to make sure that your offense is in order, because if you just look at the second half of this series, their offense is kind of starting to fall off of a cliff. Yeah. Like, they scored, I think, 81 in game four. I think they scored barely over 100 in game five. Yep. They didn't break 100 in game six. And think about it like this. In game one, they scored 113. In game two, they scored 127. So as the series has gone on, they have not been able to score it. And that's because the Clippers' defense has really turned up a notch ever since they went to small ball with Marcus Morris at the center, who, by the way, had a fantastic defensive game last night. But yeah, the Clippers' defense has ratcheted up a bit, and Dallas has not been able to score unless they are unsustainably hot from the three-point line. And that's kind of why I feel that's kind of why I felt optimistic going into game six, and that's why I feel even more optimistic going into game seven.
You know what's interesting, though, and you say how good the Clippers defense has been, but if you're on Twitter during the game, which you are, and you're one of the people along with guys—
I'm not, actually. No,
you're not? Yes, I mean, you are. You get out of here.
I tweet, but I don't read my timeline.
Yeah, for sure. No, but where I'm getting at is that guys like you, Shane Young, you guys are tweeting about the defense and how a guy like Reggie Jackson is leaving his man to double and leaving an open shooter. So what I'm saying is how good the defense has been, good, but it seems like it could be even better if the Clippers actually stayed with their man and stayed home and didn't go double. Like, there were times, by the way, last night, and it's interesting. The one thing that I love doing, I love following guys like you on Twitter, because you point something out that I may not notice. And so Reggie Jackson is someone that I was then looking at later on in the game. The Clippers got lucky. There were times when Reggie Jackson was in no man's land. And he had no idea who he was defending. He had no idea where he was. And they either A, wouldn't find his man, or B, his man missed. And so the Clippers got off the hook there. Go ahead.
No, I was saying, to your point, there's a play where I think we go up four, and Dallas calls a timeout. They come back in, and like, Kawhi Leonard is guarding Luka. I mean, and then they get the switch with Reggie. Luka gets off the ball, and like, they completely botch it. And then Luka Doncic buries an open three. And so I think on the whole, the Clippers defense hasn't been nearly as bad as people think in this series. It's just been a ton of great shot making from the Dallas Mavericks. But with that being said, there's so much low hanging fruit to pick off. And I think last night was one of the first times that I felt like we were really locked in, really competent. And even last night, despite being incredibly competent and locked in, there were just still moments that were just flat out befuddling. If the game plan is to try and make Luka into a scorer and make sure we keep a body in front of him and keep the role players in check, we're coming off of Tim Hardaway Jr.'s body way too much. We're coming off of Maxi Kleber's body way too much. And, you know, that's just something that, like, we've got one more time to get that right. And tomorrow, we'll have to get lucky again if we don't clean up our act on that end of the floor. So
I think the frustrating thing with this series is that every single game, the Clippers have had a chance to win. And yeah. I think that's the most frustrating part about this, is that there's no reason this should be seven games. I mean, Dallas was red hot. And listen, they're going to have games where they're red hot. So fine. But the Clippers did not shoot well in certain games. I mean, if you would have lost last night, I mean, Marcus Morris 1-for-10 from the field. He was 0-for-3 from three. He and Kennard and Batum were missing shots that they made all season long. And they're just missing shots that they, it's like, what's going on here? And then you have the defensive just mishaps where you're leaving your guys open. I think that's the frustrating part about this series, is that the Clippers, there's a lot of, hey, like you and I were talking after the first couple games. Like, well, listen, if they make their open shots, if Dallas cools down, they'll be fine. But I feel like we're now running out of time where it's, you can't say if this happened, if this happened, if that happened. It's like, you're in a series, and I think that's a frustrating thing, is that the Clippers have been the better team the entire series. It's just that they're just doing little things, like have a three-minute stretch where PG gets in foul trouble in game five, and they fall apart. I mean, last night, if it wasn't for PG and the three-minute stretch that he had with Kawhi sitting on the bench, the Clippers don't win that game. And it's little things in the playoffs. The Clippers just seem like every year, the little things are what sends them home. And you're hoping that in game seven, it can come together just enough to get the win.
Yeah, I mean, the playoffs are always about the details. I think Kawhi said that about afterwards, after last night, going into game seven, you know, paying attention to detail, game plan, discipline. Those things are critical. But this series is the way it is right now. It's uncomfortable to say, but this series is like the way it is because the first two games of the series, Dallas literally shot historically great from three. That's honestly just bad luck, because even if the Clippers weren't playing fantastic defense, they weren't playing horrible defense. And yet you saw like Tim Hardaway Jr. at one point in the series shooting 65% from three, while Nicholas Batum can't make an open three last night. You know what I mean? So like, I honestly, this is going to sound weird, but I honestly credit the Clippers for actually bringing the series to a seventh game, because this series should be over. Because if you shoot as well as Dallas has shot the ball from three, you should probably win this series in five or six games. And so the fact that the Clippers are finding a way to win games on the road when they can't make a shot speaks volumes. And it also speaks to the talent advantage that the Clippers have and the margin for error that they have. Otherwise, this series would be over. But I was talking to a friend the other day. The difference in this series is that the Clippers have a grand margin for error to work with. Yeah. Dallas doesn't.
Yeah.
However, because Dallas doesn't have a margin for error during this series, they've made up for it by shooting the ball just incredibly well. They're shooting the ball better than you could have even predicted or expected going into a series. Like, it's honestly incredible, and they are due for a bad shooting night at Staples.
And they've been, by the way, they have tapered off a little bit at home, but they've shot very well at Staples, to your point. I mean, Luka's been unbelievable at Staples Center, but Dallas's role players have absolutely cooled off in the last like three or four games. So that's one thing that needs to be recognized. Like, I mean, Tim Hardaway Jr. was 4-of-11 from three last night. So even he, who was as good, I mean, he had 23 points, but he is starting to cool off a little bit. Dorian Finney-Smith was 3-of-7 from deep. Luka was 2-for-9. Kleba was 0-for-1. Dwight Powell, who was great in game five, somehow only played 7 minutes in the game last night, which didn't make sense at all. And he didn't take a shot. So slowly but surely, the role players are starting to cool down. And for the Clippers, their role players aren't doing a whole lot either. Their bench got one field goal last night, and that was Luke Kennard's floater. I mean, that's it. That's the only shot the Clippers bench made. Marcus Morris was 1-for-10. I want to quickly touch on Marcus Morris and PG, and then I want to talk about tomorrow's game. Marcus Morris, 1-for-10. Really bad shooting night. There was a point where I said, I've seen enough of him. I don't want him on the floor. But you thought his defense was great. What did he do?
This may have been it's definitely the best defensive performance from Marcus Morris this season. And it may have been the best defensive performance of his entire Clipper tenure. I mean, when you needed it most, he was actually playing like a real center. Like, he was playing our small ball center, but he was battling Boban and he was tipping the ball out. And he was staying in front of Luka Doncic on several possessions. He was key in keeping Luka Doncic in check for most of the game. And so that has value. And so often with Marcus, you just don't know how valuable he can be if he's not making shots. And I thought last night was one of the first times where you saw how good he could be, even if he's not making shots. That defensive versatility that you wanted out of Marcus Morris kind of showed itself last night in a way that saved our season in a lot of ways. Because while Kawhi Leonard did a marvelous job defensively on Luka, when he's getting a screen and he's getting switched off with Marcus, Marcus Morris needed to be up for the challenge, and he was fantastic. There were quite a few moments where individually, one-on-one against Luka or against Tim Hardaway Jr., he was able to contain and keep the ball in front of him without fouling. And so that to me was just incredibly impressive. But you know, to your point, hopefully we can get some points from our role guys, because 90 out of the 104 points scored yesterday was done by three people. Yeah. Reggie Jackson, Kawhi Leonard, and Paul George. 90 out of 104 came from just those three. So, you know, maybe we need one more game of those three carrying the heavy burden, or maybe we get a game where Luke Kennard makes a three or two, or maybe Marcus Morris finally gets going from three. He's ran a little hot and cold this series, so we'll see. Hopefully we can get some role players to bounce back. But Marcus had a bad shooting night, but he played well though. He played well, and he was competent, and that means a lot, because being able to hold Dallas under 100 speaks volumes to our defense, and Marcus was a big part of that.
Yeah, I think the Clippers are going to need at least four guys in double figures and maybe even five to win the game tomorrow. I think that'll be necessary. And like you said, I mean, Marcus Morris, you're not shooting well, but at least you are not letting it affect your defense, and he was really good. And, I mean, I want to give props to Reggie Jackson. Without his first quarter, the Clippers lose that game last night, so he was huge. I mean, there have been people that have been calling for him to sit. Who the hell thought that Reggie Jackson would play 38 minutes in an elimination game when we were starting this season?
It's nuts.
It's unbelievable that we are at that point where Pat Beverly's not playing DNP CD and Reggie Jackson's getting 38 minutes. And it this series, man, it throws curveballs at you. Zoo played 5 minutes last night. Rondo, who you and I wanted to see play 25 to 30 minutes, only played 10. And guess what? It was deserved, because Rondo has been absolute trash the last two games. I mean, he was so bad in game five. I mean, he was dreadful. And then he was awful last night. And so he needed to sit. Luke Kennard finally got minutes. What are your thoughts going into game seven? First on the role guys, and then we'll talk about game seven at large. What are you thinking in terms of the Rondo, Mann, Zoo, Kennard? Who are we going to see? How many minutes? It really feels like it's going to be just a game feel type of thing, and it's going to be hard to guess who's going to play and how many minutes they're going to play.
Well, as Ty kind of showed last night by throwing Luke Kennard into the game, a lot of the minute allocation is going to be determined by who's making shots and who's not. So do we see Reggie Jackson at how many minutes did he play last night?
38.
I think he was what, 35, 36, or 38. 38?
Yeah.
Good Lord have mercy. That's incredible. In a lot of ways, that's both good and like kind of worrisome, but that's a conversation for another time. Regardless, you know, he was shooting like six. I think he made his first six shots or something like that. And he had it going as a scorer last night. And that kind of fueled why he needed to stay on the floor. So if he's not making shots, maybe we see more Terrence. Maybe we see more Luke. It's kind of like a situation where Ty is just looking for guys to make shots. And depending on who's making shots and who's having a good feel for what's going on, we'll see. But I could see him leaning Reggie Jackson big minutes again. And I could very easily see the minute distribution looking very similar to what it did in game six, in all honesty. Yeah. We're going to lean a lot in Reggie Jackson's way, for better or worse. We're going to lean on Kawhi and PG a lot. We're going to lean on Nicholas Batum a lot. And we're going to lean on Marcus Morris a lot. And if those guys, if our starters are going to play heavy minutes, then there's just no way to get other guys on the floor for any feasible amount of serious minutes, unless somebody gets in foul trouble, unless somebody isn't making shots, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. But I think Ty kind of showed his hand last night in game six with everything on the wall. These are the guys that he wants to play 38, 40 minutes. And it's win or go home in game seven, just like it was in game six. So I don't see why he would deviate from what he did last night, unless somebody gets in foul trouble or something. So I think you're going to look at it, it's roughly the same, but that's kind of the nature of playoff basketball. If we're fortunate enough to win on Sunday, tomorrow, then I guarantee you that the rotation will look a bit different on Tuesday when we have to play like Rudy Gobert and stuff like that. So it's just about being flexible, being malleable, and being able to adapt when you need to most. And Ty has proven to be able to do that.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I bet you Zoo starts if the Clippers beat Utah. I think Zoo starts. I think you'll see Pat Beverly in that series. So I think things will look different. You just have to figure out which guys work in a series, and these are the guys that work. I mean, Batum played 37 minutes, Jackson 38, 42 apiece for Kawhi and Marcus, and a shout out to PG for playing the entire second half and playing 46 minutes. I mean, as much shit as this guy gets to go 46 minutes, I mean, he didn't shoot great, 6 of 15, 2 of 7 from 3, 6 of 10 from the free throw line. He needs to be better, obviously, shooting the basketball in all facets, but to get 3 blocks, 13 huge rebounds in traffic, yeah, I mean, just monstrous. And Kennard, by the way, was a no-brainer with that zone defense to spread the floor. Just the presence of Luke Kennard, and they're going to cheat off of him and he's going to get the shots, I want him taking them, because those are shots that two of them went in and out. So those are shots that are going to go down at some point, and you hope it's in game seven. I would love for Luke to get his moment, because I've heard enough of the $64 million stuff, because A, $64 million doesn't start till next year. B, we know it sucks. So, I mean, forget about it. Game seven. You and I both obviously think that the Clippers are going to win. I think the Clippers are the better team, and it's finally going to be a curse that the home team, I think, finally does win. What needs to happen in game seven? Because I think that there are a couple keys. I think the first one is the Clippers can't go down big early. It's a no-brainer, but I think they need to have a good first quarter, because they have not had great first quarters in this series. I think the first quarter is going to be important. It'll set the tone. My biggest fear is that Reggie Jackson will shoot 2 of 12 tomorrow, and that is absolutely my biggest fear. I hope it doesn't happen, but the first quarter will tell us a lot. So I think you need to have a good first quarter, and I think you need to limit your turnovers. There are too many turnovers that are there's a coach that I used to – always talk to, Dedrick Taylor, who's the coach at Cal State Fullerton. And he taught me this, and you might think, what the hell? How did you not know this before? He's like, live ball turnovers are the worst thing you could possibly have. He's like, I don't care if you throw the ball away and it goes out of bounds. Fine. That's not a huge deal. We can set up our defense. But live ball turnovers where Kawhi gets stuck in the air and he throws it away and Dallas can break, those are the worst things, and they keep happening with he and PG. So I think you need to limit your turnovers. I think those are the two biggest things. And I think you need to have one of Batum and Marcus Morris get into double figures. I think those guys need to shoot, and they need to shoot the ball well. So those are my three keys. What are you looking at tomorrow?
I'm in agreement with you in that I do think the Clippers will win. First things first, it's a quick turnaround. Part of what you said, which was getting off on the right foot in that first quarter, is going to be key. That's one of my first keys. And that's something I'll be watching for with a quick turnaround. Can they come out with the same level of defensive intensity that they did in Dallas? If they do, I think things bode well for them, because their defense in this series has been fantastic as the series has gone on. And if they can keep that defense up, they'll have a chance to win regardless. And honestly, that's saying a lot. Like, if you go into any game having a real legitimate chance at winning, then that's a blessing. And so their defense guarantees them that. The next thing I'm looking at is obviously making shots, man. At home this series, they're shooting 34% from the three-point line. That's just abysmal, especially considering how well they shot the ball in the regular season. So, I mean, we are overdue for one of those 20 for 38 three-point nights where we shoot over 50% from three and just shoot Dallas out the gym. We are overdue for a really good shooting night. Dallas is going to open up in zone again, I'm assuming. They are just begging for the Clippers to have an outlier of a shooting night. And so I'm hoping it comes tomorrow. So how they start, how they shoot are the things that I'm looking for the most. And the last thing I'm looking for is, like what you said, these turnovers, the live ball turnovers. They're not turning the ball over a ton, but the turnovers that they do have are just flat out, like, just awful. I think I can think of, like, last night, Paul George threw the ball to Luka Doncic, like, literally threw it to him like a chess pass, yeah, which was just flat out bizarre. And then there was another one late in the fourth quarter. We come out of a timeout. Paul George is taking the ball out, and he just throws the ball away. And so our turnovers haven't been high in volume, but they've been incredibly stupid, like just stupid. And so we got to clean that up. So turnovers, how we start and how we shoot are the three things that I'm looking at going into tomorrow. But I think tomorrow will be good. I just can't imagine the Clippers losing four times in seven games on their home floor.
It is worth bringing up to add to you and I discussing the good start and how important that is. The Clippers do not fare well in the 12:30 Pacific time starts. So, number one, brutal by the NBA. Brutal by the NBA to schedule a Friday night game and then a Sunday 12:30 tip. I mean, to have 40 hours between the end of Game 6 and the start of Game 7 is begging for an injury to happen. Just stupid by the NBA to do that. But, yeah, I mean, the Clippers have not been good in these 12:30 games, and a lot of it has to do with the start. And if you start well, you can throw that 12:30 stuff out the window. If you start poorly, you put yourself into a really bad position where your back is going to be up against the wall for the final 36 minutes, and you do not want to be in that situation where your team is pressing, because when you do that, that is when things don't go well. So the Clippers absolutely need to get off to a good start. I'll be curious to see how many minutes Kawhi and PG play tomorrow. Would not be surprised to see both of them touch 42 or more again, with Kawhi playing 42 in Game 6 and PG playing 46. Those guys need to play well, and somebody, one of the role players, needs to step up for the Clippers. It needs to be somebody, and like you said, I mean, they've shot so poorly at home that you would think one of these games, it would go in the Clippers' favor, and I feel like we're owed this, Justin. We're owed this. I mean, the Lakers are out. Everyone was talking about how the Clippers shouldn't have gone and lost the final two games. And listen, they shouldn't have. They shouldn't have gone and picked that four spot. By the way, Dallas was trying to tank as well. The Clippers were not.
I disagree with that, by the way.
That Dallas was trying to tank?
No. I disagree with the notion that the Clippers shouldn't have tanked. Like, I'm gonna try to be concise with this.
Okay.
But it's, people are acting like they don't see what's happening in this series.
Yeah.
Just because the Clippers are getting unlucky with the shooting does not mean that it was a bad decision for us to do this.
Yeah.
Like the LeBron, like we made, because of our tanking in a lot of ways, we kind of avoided the Lakers and LeBron and Anthony Davis to the conference finals. And lo and behold, they didn't even make it to the conference finals. So imagine if we didn't and we had to play them in round one, right? That's a series that we could have potentially won, but that's also a series where, like, you don't actively try and go play LeBron James and Anthony Davis. You know what I mean? Like, I just thought that that's sound decision making by the Clippers. And, you know, they ran into a team like the Dallas Mavericks who are just shooting way far above what they did in a regular season.
Yeah.
And like, that's just bad luck. But like, avoiding LeBron James and Anthony Davis to the conference finals is always a smart decision to me. I just didn't understand that.
I think the counterpoint to that is that seeing how poorly the Lakers looked, that now would be the time where you'd want to face them, and that they were limping into the playoffs. So if you're going to face them, go ahead. I don't know why you're dodging them. But that's the counterpoint.
Well,
and wait, I'll say one more thing before you jump in. Is that by sitting the stars the final two games, it allowed you to play Paul George 46 minutes last night. It allowed you to play Kawhi Leonard 42 minutes last night because they were rested and they got that time off. So there is the counterpoint to the, hey, they shouldn't have sat those guys. It's like, well, because they sat those guys, they were able to play big minutes in the games that were necessary. So that is that's your side that is a check mark there. So go ahead, though, about the Lakers thing.
So if the Lakers are not playing great going into the playoffs, then just let somebody else handle them.
Yeah, that's fair.
Like, and if they are playing great, then you obviously want to wait until you play them in the conference finals. Like, I never, that's the part that I don't understand. And like, you know, the Clippers are far superior than the Dallas Mavericks. And honestly, the reason why this series is the way it is because both teams are having outlier shooting performances through six games. That's just in my personal opinion. Like, we can quibble with like a defensive adjustments and yada, yada, yada. But the truth of the matter is Dallas shot the shit out the ball, especially the first couple of games, in a way that's rarely been seen in NBA playoff history.
Well, the Clippers didn't expect Steph Curry all of a sudden to put on a Dallas Mavericks jersey. They didn't expect Luka to all of a sudden turn into Steph Curry and for Tim Hardaway Jr. turn into Klay Thompson. I mean, they didn't expect that. To your point, like, Dallas was a good matchup for the Clippers. It's just that Dallas shot really well, and Rick Carlisle is a really good coach. And I got to tell you, Ty Lue, also a very good coach, because the adjustments that he has made in this series has been unbelievable. If Doc Rivers is coaching this team, they go out in five. But because the Clippers have Ty Lue making these adjustments, I feel confident having him in our corner going into a game seven. So, yeah, I mean, we'll put that stuff aside, whether the Clippers should have or shouldn't have tanked. The truth of the matter is the Clippers are in a game seven. The Lakers are at home. I would love to see the Clippers would love to see the Clippers shut the entire national media up and win this game tomorrow afternoon and go into a matchup with the Utah Jazz. I would just love to see it. I hope it happens. It's due. We're due for some good stuff, Justin. I feel like we've had so many letdowns as Clipper fans that we're due for a win like this. We're due for a win like San Antonio, where the Clippers beat the Spurs to go on to the next round. I think we're due.
Yeah, I agree. And like, you know, again, the odds of I would be disappointed. It would be a disaster if they lost four home games in one series. And I just don't think the Mavericks are going to shoot this well again. And like I said, in terms of margin for error, the Dallas Mavericks need so much to go right for them to win. I think in their wins, they're shooting like 46 or something like that from the 3-point line, just some outrageous number. And I think the fact that it is a game seven, the fact that they are on the road, I think we get a average to below average shooting night from the Dallas Mavericks. And I think that alone puts the Clippers in a driver's seat. We get a typical offensive day or offensive night from the Clippers. And I think put those two things together and we're in Utah Tuesday.
Justin, we'll either be talking to you after game three next weekend, or we'll be talking to you after the season obviously is over, and we'll do a little post-mortem, which hopefully we are not doing. But as always, Justin Wilson at LA Clippers Film on Twitter. Thanks again, my dude. Really appreciate you hopping on.
Thank you for having me on. It's always a blast to do these. And hopefully the next time I'm on, we're talking about Clippers Jazz and not what they need to do in the offseason.
So for Justin, I'm Brandon. Appreciate you listening. I'm at BDMarcus on Twitter. At Hoopball Clips is the Twitter handle. You've been listening to the Hoopball Clippers podcast. Until next time, go Clips.
This has been a Hoop Ball presentation.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.